the Chronic Life Podcast, where life is lived well. And now your hosts, Dr. Kevin Payne and Don Peterson.
Okay, Don, stop me if you've heard this one, okay?
All right.
So a guy with multiple sclerosis walks into a bar, and a table, and a stool, and a doorway.
That's the old joke, right? I'm not drunk. I have MS.
Yeah, exactly. It's that kind of sums up, I think, what we're trying to talk about here today, mm-hmm. because we're going to be talking about humor and chronic illness. You know, right off the bat here, there's nothing funny about being chronically sick.
No.
But how we meet it, how we approach it, how we interact with one another about it can make all the difference in our quality of life.
I think that's been kind of a recurring theme throughout many of the episodes we've done so far, is really how you react to things determines how you feel about it, right? So if you can try to find the humor in all facets of life, I guess, the better you'll be at dealing with those things. And chronic illness is just like any other bad news in some respects. When we think about humor, obviously there's the sarcastic sort of negative humor where I make fun of somebody, mm-hmm. or there's the making fun of me, self-deprecating mm-hmm. humor, I think we call it. Mm-hmm. Positive humor. How do we mm-hmm. stay positive?
You know, there's actually a lot of different ways to divide up humor. And there's one way that for, 10 or 20 years now has been a really useful way to look at the social aspects of it and the mental and emotional aspects. So we're going to really dive into that in the second segment here. Okay. Humor can make us uncomfortable, and we all have different standards for what's funny and what isn't. And that's because humor is linked to our threat responses.
Really?
It really is. And it's linked even at a superficial level. It's not an accident that a grin and a grimace, so a grin of joy and a grimace of pain or fear, look a lot like one another.
Ah, I guess I never really connected those two words.
Really do. But
grin and grimace.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
But if you look at the facial expressions, that when you grin and when you grimace, you're showing your teeth slightly, you've got your lips stretched, and there's actually a lot of similarity there. And the reason is the very first thing in our threat response is a pause. It's where we suddenly become really alert, and it's that freeze response that comes before the fight and the flight. And what we're looking at is there's something that surprised us. There's something that doesn't quite fit somehow. With humor, we've got that something that doesn't fit quite well. It's ludicrous in some way. It's exaggerated. And we're pausing and we're saying, oh, instead of a fearful response, it's a big sigh of relief.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I think that, you know, one of the people I admire as a stand-up comedian probably more than any is Jerry Seinfeld. He has two sort of unique characteristics about his humor that I think are admirable. One is he never cusses. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been asked, you know, because a lot of today's comics, right, they cuss a lot,
yeah.
right? Dropping F-bombs, that sort of shock that you're talking mm-hmm. about, right? That mm-hmm. surprise that you're talking about. But just dropping those words, you're kind of surprised, right? Like, wow, he said that, right?
It's kind of an easy shortcut.
Well, and I guess that was his explanation. He said, it's lazy. Mm-hmm. It's lazy on the part of the writer to surprise you with the F-bomb, right, mm-hmm. to get a quick laugh out of you. But the other thing that I like about Jerry so much is that he takes the obvious and he makes it seem, well, incongruent with what we think of as the obvious, right? And I wish I could think of a line of his, but he's just very, very good at observing mm-hmm. and then telling us what's weird about what he observes. And it's a spin, I think, it's an evolution of what the George Carlin comedy was like, right? Very cerebral, very thoughtful. You know, I don't get on a plane. I get in a plane, right?
Yeah,
silly
exactly.
Things like that, right?
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Changing the word entirely changes the meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And we use it, the phrase, let's get on the plane, not even thinking about how unobvious that statement is.
Yeah.
Because you would never get on the plane. You want to get in the plane. Right?
Well, sometimes but I want to get out of the plane.
But you do get on a boat.
That's right.
So,
That's exactly right. Humor is always about surprise, transgression, exaggeration, reframing, incongruence. It's always about finding that thing that doesn't fit. And it may be physical humor, slapstick, you know, someone like Laurel and Hardy or Dick Van Dyke and a lot of his physical comedy. You are viewing what could be a painful circumstance, and then it turns out that it's not. And so that's one kind of incongruence. But we do it with language, like you're talking about how Seinfeld does it. Or so it's always about that transgression. And that's why when we get to making fun of something like chronic illness, we have to be very careful, because all humor is about coming up to a boundary. And then if you push it too far, the people around you, they don't find that funny anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like sarcasm, right? I mean, I think the root word of sarcasm is something to do with cutting and bloodletting or something like that. I mean, it's not a good word. It actually describes a fairly mortal, you know, dangerous thing. But we use it as humor, but it's really cutting, right?
Yeah.
You're really cutting somebody, or you're cutting something about somebody to try to be funny. And I believe, you know, especially with people with chronic conditions, you could cross that line really quickly and maybe not even know it.
Right. Right? It's like, as somebody with MS, I can get away with telling that joke about the guy who's bumped into everything, you know, because I've lived it.
Right. But if I said that joke.
Exactly.
That, you know, and I said, oh, look at Kevin. Right?
Mm-hmm.
He's either drunk or he's got MS, right?
Right.
That may not be funny.
That may not. I mean, you could tell it to me because we know each other well enough.
Right.
But around in a strange environment with other people around, they wouldn't take that well at all. It's like I can remember in college, we had a circle of friends that lived in the dorm together, and there was one guy who was, let's face it, you always have one guy in your group of friends who's just a little more challenged than everybody else.
Yeah, that was always me.
Okay. Well, and the way we guys exhibit our humor and our love for one another can sometimes be kind of cutting on the outside, you know, if they're not part of the group.
Well, I think it goes to the level of competitiveness, right? Males tend to be very competitive with one another. It's not necessarily a good thing for a man to beat a woman at something, nor is it favorable for a woman to overtly beat the man at something. But men can beat men and conquer other men and still have humor about it, still get along. It's just that when you add that other gender to it, things start to change.
You put
right?
that gender dynamic in there, and we do have, we're uncertain about how the standards
right.
often happen. So, you know, we had this group, and a new guy came into the dorm, and he was trying to ingratiate himself into our group. And the way he chose to do it, he just picked up on how we always busted the chops of this one particular guy.
Oh, okay.
And he jumped in with that stuff. All the rest of us turned on him and just kind of eviscerated him because he wasn't a member of the group and he hadn't earned the relationship that allowed him
right.
to do that.
Well, I think that's what it is, right? If you have mutual respect, admiration for one another, and you have a trust relationship, you can say things that can be, well, sarcastic or demeaning or even self-deprecating. But, you know, your friends got your back, and they always know you have their back, right?
Right.
It's when you introduce somebody who doesn't have that trust relationship that dynamic changes and the line moves, right? So, I completely understand how situationally, right, things might change.
Yeah, and so, you know, we always get to, people people have tried for thousands of years now to identify, well, what's funny and what isn't. And the real answer is it depends. And it depends on where the violation occurred and how you feel about it and who tried to be humorous and how they tried to be humorous and the context that it happened in. And so, because when we're dealing with chronic illness, we're very sensitive about a lot of these things. It becomes a really touchy area for many of us to be funny about.
Well, especially if there's physical manifestations of your condition, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I know, you know, a number of people who have Crohn's disease or have an ostomy bag, and, you know, they can joke about it, but you really mm-hmm. can't joke about it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I heard somebody said to me one time who had an ostomy bag, she said, yeah, I know the thing I worry about when I go into the store is somebody thinks I'm shoplifting. This pouch, you know.
Right.
And I thought, well, you could say that, but I couldn't say that. Even if I thought that that might be funny and I was meant it in the most humorous way, that's just mm-hmm. not something you would say to somebody with an ostomy bag, right?
Right. And it's like, you know, I'm not going to make jokes about conditions that I don't have. So I'm totally comfortable making a joke about multiple sclerosis. I'm totally comfortable making jokes about, say, depression, because that's something that I've dealt with for a very long time, and it often comes with MS. I have a great deal of compassion for it, but I can also see the ludicrous side of it. Now, it may be a little chancier for me, unless somebody knew me really well. You know, it's like I would feel comfortable with people who knew me well making jokes about, say, obesity. Because if anybody'd known me for a long time, they would know that I used to be 120 pounds heavier than what I am now. And so I'm not making fun of that. I'm you know, finding the humorous side of the difficulties living with that sort of thing.
Well, that's really what this is about, right? Is trying to find the humor, the opportunity to laugh at the situation with good humor in mind, in a positive way, so that the human side of what we're dealing with can still show through, right? Yeah. We don't want to become, you know, insular and stoic and closed off from others because they're afraid how we're going to react to what they might say, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know a lot of couples who get together because one found the other incredibly humorous. Well, if something happens in their life that is tragic or negative, the other person's not going to lose that sense of humor, but they're going to have to find ways to contain it or control it differently than they might have before.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want them to change too much, right? You want them to continue to see the humor side of life.
Yeah. You know, sometimes we are so deep in the blackness of what it is that we're living that we forget about that. And so as a caregiver, sometimes the kindest thing you can do is help see just a little glimmer of light and life and hope in what's going on.
Yeah. And I was reading an article the other day that I think kind of led me to believe that, you know, people who have chronic conditions, they just wanted to be considered normal. They want to be treated like normal people. They don't want you to get overly sensitive about their condition and how it impacts you and what you can say and how do you say it and is it too soon, you know, is it too much, is it too far? I think those are the things that are hard, and I know we'll get into some of those things. But I do believe that humor can help you relax. It relieves stress. It, you know, just putting a smile. People say, well, just put a smile on your face. Well, sometimes that's really hard, but sometimes it actually does improve your outlook.
Well, the just smile advice is probably one of the worst things ever that anybody can say to you.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that if we can't find a smile, sometimes just behaviorally acting happy doesn't change our attitudes, but having somebody come in, if you are behaving in a way that other people might come up to you and say, oh, you really need to smile about it, you're already aware of that.
Oh, yeah. It'd be like somebody saying, well, if you just had a more positive attitude, maybe it wouldn't feel so bad.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's like, pretty hollow.
Yeah,
right?
It is.
I get it.
It is. In this section, we've kind of talked about how sometimes it's funny, sometimes it isn't. There's a lot of, you know, it depends involved here. And we do want to acknowledge that it's easy to get nervous and uncomfortable when we're talking about humor and something as serious as chronic illness. But humor is still an exercise in finding a better perspective. And that is really important. After the break, we'll talk a little bit about positive kinds of humor and negative kinds of humor and why it's so uncomfortable.
We all have challenges. Mine is multiple sclerosis. We each have this one life, and we didn't choose to be saddled with chronic illness. But there's a better way. So I choose to just jump. And you can too. It's your life. Live it well. ChronicCal.com.
Welcome back to the Chronic Life Podcast. And we're talking about humor and the different types of humor. And so, Kevin, I got to ask you.
Okay.
You have this website, Chronic Cow.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you making fun of cows? What did the cow ever do to you?
You know, I love that cow. I truly do.
And does it love you back?
Yeah, she does. Her name's Bossy.
And never mind.
No, she truly is.
I was going to do a Rodney Dangerfield thing there, but I probably shouldn't.
Well, yeah, we do want to keep this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take my wife, please. Take my cow.
Well, you know, I would be glad for somebody else to take it because Chronic Cow is about finding a sense of humor first. It's about reframing your perspective on things. One of the things that I noticed collecting data and helping many, many people with chronic illnesses is that one of the first problems that we see when somebody's really being weighed down with life with a chronic illness is that they have framed their chronic illness often as a monster or a demon that has come to live in their corpse with them, you know? And if you frame it that way, if you frame your life as a battle with a monster, you will never win.
Yeah.
But a cow? I mean, she's big, she's bulky, she's smelly, she gets in the way. Go to the website, chroniccow.com, and you'll see her. And if you look at the videos, she's got all kinds of different expressions. You know, the app is coming out later this year, and she's actually part of the interaction in the app. You know, you can drag her face around and change her expression to mimic what you're feeling. And so it's you've got to have a sense of humor about it, about something that is not funny at all.
Well, cows aren't naturally funny. But
no.
Cows in the context of chronic conditions just sort of relieves the tension.
And there's actually a story about it. See, in my family, we had this long-running story that one day I would come down with variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, which is, you know, the human version of mad cow, which is because I lived in England. I was a student there during the mad cow scare in the early 90s. And so to this day, I cannot donate blood. The American Red Cross will not allow me to donate blood because I lived there during that time. And so I got my diagnosis of MS, and I came home, and my kids were really young at that time, and I set everybody around the table in the kitchen and told them about what this was that I got. And, you know, they're really small this time. And they were really quiet after I told them. And one of them leaned over to the other and said, "Daddy got the cow!" And it stuck. So around my house, my MS became Daddy's mad cow. And so, you know, when my symptoms were acting up on a day, I'd hear them say to one another, "Daddy's cow's really mad today." And on a couple of occasions when they didn't think I heard and my symptoms were really bad, one of them would say to the other, "Daddy's cow is really pissed."
See, I thought it was all about an alliteration.
Oh,
because
no.
Chronic pig just doesn't cut it.
No, chronic pig does not cut it.
Or chronic horse. Or
although I had a lot of pigs as a kid. That's a whole different podcast. But that's, you know, that's one thing that I can tell is that once I can tell that story to people who live with a chronic illness, and they get it immediately if they've lived with almost, you know, to a person. People who don't live with a chronic condition. So if I'm talking to other business types or potential investors or things like that.
The suits.
Yeah, the suits. they tend to get uncomfortable because they think I'm not being serious enough about the conditions.
You mean from a medical perspective?
Yeah, they think that I'm not approaching what the company does in a serious enough way.
I could see that.
Yeah, they do. But that's the difference in perspective between somebody who doesn't live with a chronic condition and most of us who do.
Well, I think I agree with you. I'm going to add to that. I think that it has something else to do with the receiver's ability to have a sense of humor about it, right?
Yeah.
So I used to work for this cardiologist, and we ran this imaging company, and he's passed away, so even if he listened to this, he wouldn't care. But I remember one time, and I ran the operations, and he pulled me aside after one of our group meetings, and we had, you know, 40, 50 employees, and we'd all get in a room, and we'd just go through the big things going on and what we were going to do and strategy things and tactical things. And I always tried to make it fun. And we laughed a lot. I mean, we just joked around about each other and about, you know, the things we were dealing with. And he pulled me aside one day, and he goes, "Don," he said, "I need you to take this much more seriously." And I said, "Well, I take it very seriously." "Yeah, but you're having too much fun in these meetings." And I thought, "Well, sorry, I'm probably not going to change." I mean, to me, humor is a great way in a relationship, whether one to many or many to one or one to one or whatever it is. It's a great way to break the ice, to relieve the tension, to make this more of a conversation and less of a lecture or an interview or whatever it is. And I think that's something we all do almost routinely and unconsciously, is we try to do something humorous or say something humorous that will lighten the mood, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that? And I think that's what, you know, as a provider in the infusion business and other things, you know, you didn't always know what the appropriate thing to say might be to somebody, because in many respects, I didn't even know what condition many of our patients had, just that they were there getting infusions. And so I could deduce from what drug we were giving them what condition they were dealing with. But we never talked about that. We talked about other things that might be funny, might be humorous, that would give them an opportunity to relax, to realize that I'm just as human as you are, and we can have a conversation and not dwell on your condition or the treatment that you're getting from us or anything even related to it. We would talk about family, and we'd joke about the kids or whatever, and I think that's kind of a normal human thing, right?
Yeah, it is. And as a matter of fact, we, you know, all the research says that we find people who are humorous more likable, we find them sexier, we think they're smarter, we have, you know, all of these things come along with humor and the way we interact with one another. You'd rightly brought up that question in the first segment about the different kinds of humor and why some work and don't, and so I wanted here, there are dozens and dozens of different ways of dividing up humor, but there's one that has been pretty useful for what we're interested in, and it's called the Humor Styles Questionnaire. And it's been around for 15, 20 years now or so, and it has been really useful. And you can actually, you know, and I would encourage our listeners to go to humorstyles.com. And right there on the front page, you can take the inventory. It takes about 5 minutes or so, and you can go there, and it will kind of group you into the degree to which you use some different types of humor that we're going to be talking about here. We're going to be talking about four different kinds, and you know, I'll share where I fit with all those here in a minute. But it's really a 2x2 matrix. And you can look at it on one dimension. There's, is the humor inward directed or outward directed? So are you yourself the object of your humor, or is someone else or something outside you the object of your humor? And then the other dimension is it's called adaptivity. So adaptive versus maladaptive. In other words, the adaptive approaches tend to be friendly, warmer, they're about making connections with other people, and the maladaptive ones are the kinds of cutting humor. They're about making distance or establishing superiority or something like that.
I don't know how people would find that kind of sort of, you know, cutting humor appropriate. And I think those are the things we mentioned in the previous segment about the group of people you were with in college and how someone came into the group and started picking on the person that you all picked on from a humorous perspective and then started doing it. But he didn't have that trust relationship with you all. And I think that certain types of humor require that trust first. That's why I said a moment ago about how I would talk with patients in our infusion centers is try to talk about other things, but find humor in other parts of life, because I didn't think it was appropriate for me to even comment on their condition, right? Because mm-hmm. as a provider, you know, I mean, certainly, you know, with privacy laws and things like that, of course, you know, I already knew what their problem was, or I would know, but it wasn't appropriate. I didn't have that kind of relationship with
right.
them to even mention something as intimate as their particular condition.
And some people just don't have very well-developed social radar that allows them to make that kind of discernment. So on that adaptive side, these kinds of humor, they lower depression, they increase esteem, they make us feel better in the world. And there are two kinds. There's the affiliative humor, which is other-directed. So maybe I'm poking fun at you, but it's in a way that doesn't put a distance between us that draws us together, right? It's about affirming we-ness. And so you'll find a lot of that humor in illness communities among people who share an illness, because it's about, yeah, I've been through, you know, somebody is making a joke about, yeah, I got to go pee all the time. And everybody else is laughing about it because, yeah, I've been there, done that. As a matter of, I'm going to take a break and do that right now.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the funniest advertising signs I've ever seen was at the ice rink, and a local gastroenterology practice had taken out one of the, you know, along the boards, you know, in the ice rink. Mm-hmm. They have different advertisements. And he had, you know, whatever the name of his gastro firm, his practice was, and his tagline was, "We're number one in number two."
Yeah, exactly.
So that was a great sign. I thought, well, I imagine that's not the only, he's not the only one using that, but it just,
probably
to
not,
me, is a great line. But
you've remembered it for,
well, yeah. That was, to me, it was just a great line to talk about something that, well, we don't talk about very much.
Yeah, right? And humor is often the way that we use to, it's a social lubricant, and it allows us to get into some of those difficult topics if we can. Chuckle about it to begin with.
Well, and I think that's what's important, right, is that we try to find what's humorous about things and not be too hard on people who don't really understand our condition or can really appreciate how difficult it can be and challenging at times. To give some grace to those folks who are really trying to just lighten the mood and put a smile on our faces and you know, make us laugh at our just the human condition in general.
Yeah, and that's where that other kind of adaptive humor comes in. It's self-enhancing humor. And so you might be making fun of yourself or your circumstances that you're in, but you're doing it in a way that improves your outlook.
Yeah, right? It's like my kids make fun of me because my hair's turning white and, you know, I'm getting older and, you know, they make fun of me all the time. It's like, well, Dad, we saw you out walking the dog. It's like, well, how'd you know it was me if you came up from behind? Because they were driving up the street and they said, oh, we just noticed your white hair.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well,
yeah.
Thanks. You know, I guess I don't notice it that much, but they do. And, yeah. But, you know, but they mean it in a humorous way. And I know that.
Of course. And you know, maybe the ultimate example is Monty Python's The Life of Brian. And you know, at the end, you've got this massive row of men who are being crucified, and they're all singing, "Always look on the bright side of life." And sometimes that's how we feel living with a chronic illness. It's no matter how grim this is, let's find that positive thing. So these adaptive approaches to humor are really helpful. Now, the maladaptive approaches, they're about asserting status. They're about, you know, maybe trying to abase yourself so that you can avoid conflict. You know, you've got things, you degrade others with aggressive humor. You know, Schadenfreude. A wonderful German word.
That's a great word.
Yeah, that we just do not have a direct English translation for, but it's that, you know, taking pleasure in the pain of others.
Yeah, it's got that, the word with the je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, exactly.
It's, I don't know what, but it has that, it's the right word to describe us taking pleasure in other people's pain.
Yes, right? And so we do that, and we also have, and this is one that is associated with internalizing victimhood, and that's self-defeating humor. So that's when you're making fun of yourself and your condition in a negative way.
Yeah. Well, I've heard that from people who have these conditions, and I think they mean it in a humorous way when they say, well, I could be dead.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, well, yeah, I mean the ultimate outcome, right? But I know they mean it to say, look, it could be worse, is what they're really saying.
Right.
Well, it could be worse, right?
And part of that is because self-deprecating humor only works if your status up.
Yeah.
So in other words, if I'm handsome and wealthy and all that, and I make fun of myself, then everybody's okay with that. If I'm status down, which by definition, if you're sick, that is a lower status that society ascribes to you. If you do that, then that makes other people uncomfortable.
Yeah, it would make me uncomfortable when people would say that, because you'd sit there, should I agree with you? Well, at least you're not. You're vertical. You're not horizontal. You know, I mean, and I would say something like, yeah, vertical is always better, right? I mean, I would try to extend the joke a little bit, but it always made me like, what's the right thing to say here?
Right, right. You know, we always have to be careful, and we always have to understand that it is where other people draw the boundaries, because remember, humor is always taking you up to a boundary is different. And you have to respect that other people are not going to draw those boundaries in the same place as you are. When we're dealing with humor surrounding chronic illness, we find some wildly different standards that people apply.
Oh, yeah. There's always that person you tell a joke to, and you think it's funny, and everybody else thinks it's funny, and they just sit there, and they don't. Or they won't acknowledge that they do. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it's kind of like pain, right? It's just a different threshold for everybody.
It is.
What you find humorous, you know, is very individual. And so,
in the next segment, let's talk about some of the benefits that we get from humor and how to use them. And
I know it helps me a lot. If I'm feeling stressed about something, or my brain is preoccupied with something that's coming up and I'm stressing about it or thinking about it, worrying about it, if I go read something humorous or I listen to something humorous, it changes my outlook a little bit. And even a little bit is better than not. When we come back from the break, let's talk about how humor really does work in the overall scheme of things.
We all have challenges. Mine is multiple sclerosis. We each have this one life, and we didn't choose to be saddled with chronic illness. But there's a better way. So I choose to just jump. And you can too. It's your life. Live it well. ChronicCal.com.
Humor is massively important to me. And probably the best way to illustrate it is just to share a little story. And that was a couple of years ago. I'm out mowing my lawn. You know that heat changes can be really serious for MS effects. And so I try to be very careful about this, but somehow this day I woefully miscalculated. And I'm pushing the mower down the hill in my front lawn, and suddenly it hit. All I can say is this was the most pain I had ever experienced in my life. Wow. I mean, literally. It felt like I was being stung by a swarm of nasty giant electric hornets. And and I fell over. My body seized up. I was completely paralyzed. I was completely spastic. So here I am, lying on my side, and fortunately the mower was one of those that had the little, when you let go of it, you know, it stops. Otherwise it would have been, you know, down the road. So I'm laying there frozen, and I'm in such pain that it looked like a cartoon. You know, in the cartoons where your awareness, the blackness, just kind of goes into a circle and just everything disappears. It is the first time in my life that I ever passed out from pain.
Wow. Well, I thought you were going to tell like a Hunger Games story when you mentioned the electric wasps.
Oh, yeah.
But
no.
Go ahead, please.
No. So here I am. So I was probably out for less than a minute. And so I'm coming back to consciousness, and my world is kind of filling back in, and I'm still frozen. I can't move. I mean, I'm absolutely paralyzed, and I'm in pain, and the tears have just warped my world. And there's this weird thing that always happens to you when you get an extreme exacerbation with MS, and it's because MS comes and goes and comes and goes and comes and goes and comes and goes until one day it doesn't.
It comes and doesn't go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's when you make the transition from relapsing remitting to secondary progressive. And there's never a warning that it's going to be coming. So every time one of those happen, you think to yourself, is this it? Am I ever going to have another better moment? So there I am, having this thought, paralyzed, and it's a gorgeous day. There's this beautiful, you know, it's in the middle of the afternoon, late summer. There's this beautiful, clear blue sky. Everything is lush and green because this is, you know, suburban. Just everybody's very serious about it and all. And I'm crying from the pain, and I just came out and I started laughing. and I started laughing, and it was absolutely uncontrollable. I was laughing so hard that I was crying over it. I still couldn't move, but I was just struck with the ridiculousness of all of this on this gorgeous, beautiful day. You know, being in this position and wondering. And eventually, you know, I started being able to, the pain subsided, and I started being able to move again. But it was being able to see the ridiculousness of it and to laugh at this that got me through it.
Well, I mean, I think that when you have an event like that, the way you respond to it often has as much to do with how you feel about it. You know, as the actual fall or the hurt or whatever it is you're dealing with. So response, your own response, laugh at it. You know, I was watching a TV show, and this astronaut was talking about their first spacewalk, and then the sun came up over, like, the horizon. He said that he literally got tears in his eyes because it was so stunning a visual.
Mm-hmm.
He said, but in space, there's no gravity. He said, so I couldn't see. All of a sudden, I'm blinded. My vision is entirely obscured by these tears because they don't fall in space. They just sit there. And he said, I literally radioed Houston and said, Houston, I have a problem. I can't see. And he said, somebody radioed up and said, shake your head. And he said, so inside the helmet, he said, I shook my head really quickly. And he said, the tears moved away. And he said, but I could see them floating around inside my helmet. He said, but I could see again. It was amazing.
Right.
But you know, it's how we respond, right? And your story is very similar. It's funny that you tell that story because a couple of years ago, I had the experience where I grew up in a house where you don't wear shoes in the house, right? Mm-hmm. So it's late fall, and it's raining out, and my first job every morning was to take the dog out, mm-hmm. right? And our dog had gotten older, and you know, it was wet on the deck from the rain, so you know. When he got up, I thought, well, I better take him out. And I'd already been up for an hour or two doing whatever I do when I get up in the morning. And so I picked him up, scooped him up in my arms, and I walked out the sliding glass door to the deck, walked across the deck, but I had my sandals on. And I don't know why I was wearing sandals that day, but I was. And I went to step off the top step, and I literally slipped off the step. Now, what happened is the rain had turned to freezing rain, during the course of that hour and a half or whatever, you know, from the time I got up until the dog was ready to go out. And when I fell, the dog was in my arms, and mm-hmm. and I hit really hard my back in the middle of three stairs. And so first I'm laying there, and I'm like you, everything slows down, right?
Yeah.
It's like slow-mo, right? Mm-hmm. And everything around me just sort of stopped. And I'm laying there, and I'm checking my toe. Okay, that my right leg works. Checking my left leg works. Then I think, oh, my God, I fell on the dog. Where's the dog? I look over. The dog's out in the grass peeing. And I'm like, well, he's okay. I guess I'm okay too, right? But it took a while. But like you said, I literally just started laughing because it was so ridiculous. But here it is 2 years later. I still have the remnants of the hematoma on my back from the fall. It was that mm-hmm. bad. But I thought to myself, but at least everything works and the dog is peeing.
Yep.
So, you know, it's all good, right?
It's about perspective. So the lesson out of all of this is the positive effects of humor come in two ways. One, it comes from positive humor, okay? So it's, you know, affirmative humor, humor that brings us together, the nature of the humor, right? And the second thing is it comes from what we call Duchenne smiling or laughing. And
you scientists and your names, it's amazing to me that you have words for all these things.
We do. And it turns out that there's spontaneous laughter and smiling. And you know the secret. You know how to tell when somebody's really smiling, right?
Their eyes smile.
Their eyes, exactly.
Yeah.
You look at the eyes. So fake laughter, fake smiles, the eyes don't crinkle. Unless you're practiced.
Yeah.
At it. I mean,
yeah.
You can practice.
I've tried.
Yeah, but I mean,
that's why I get a lot of crap from my family about, Dad, smile. I am smiling. No, you're not smiling.
Yeah, exactly. But it turns out that those things do provide relief for us. Temporary relief. It's not going to be permanent or anything. It's going to be short term.
Isn't there a disease called Duchenne's?
It's called Duchenne's laughter or Duchenne's smiling because it's named after the French neurologist who many people consider, he's a 19th century scientist. He's the first person to study this, and many people consider him the father of neurology as a field.
Okay.
So there's several things that are named after him. And
that's good.
Yeah, yeah.
He's obviously made an impact.
He did. We get these positive effects, and they're physical effects, and they're mental effects, they're social effects, they're even effects that help reduce the predations associated with aging. It can actually increase pain threshold and tolerance. It can boost our immune function. It can reduce our overall stress and anxiety levels. All of those things. That actually is associated with improving the medical value of treatment trajectories.
Well, I would believe, and we've talked about this in previous episodes, about just having a positive attitude, right? And if humor helps sort of, you know, create and foster that positive attitude, then, yeah, you would hope that your condition would fare better, you would fare better with your condition, with a more positive attitude. And that's what I love about humor, you know, no matter what your situation is, no matter how tough or dire something can be, you want to find a way to maintain your sense of humor. Right? Don't lose it. Just hang on to that and cherish that. To me, it's a great gift. It's one of, you know, the many gifts we've been given as human beings is that we can laugh. I've never seen, I'm sorry, but your chronic cow has never laughed because they found something funny. You know, we do. And that's a uniquely human, in my opinion, a uniquely human condition or a uniquely human ability.
Well, we do. One of the things that the research has found is that it's something that we share with a lot of other animals now, too. Now, there's nobody that has, you know, there's no species that has it developed to the degree we do. But we know that apes, dogs, even, will play jokes on one another and they'll laugh. You know, engage in that kind of behavior. And, you know, not only those physical effects, it's got social effects for them and for us as well. It improves our relationships You know, when we share that humor, and especially women find humor in men more desirable than men find it in women.
Well, that's exactly what everybody, I tell everybody about my wife. She didn't marry me for my money. She married me for my funny.
Yeah, it is.
Right?
See,
because
that's good.
I'll always have the funny. Mm-hmm. I don't always have, you know, we didn't always have the money.
Sure.
And although she may have married me, I don't know. You'll have to ask her. But I don't know if I'm still funny or was as funny as I was 40 years ago when we got married.
Well, I think you're funny.
Well, funny looking. That's what my kids would say, right?
Yeah, old kids. Yeah, leave it to your kids to always find a way to put you back into your place.
That's right. That's their job.
Yes, and mine do that well as well. But that shared fun is a real human need. We need to strengthen that social capital. And it's also a way, you know, we've talked in previous episodes about how there is an exchange aspect to relationships. One of the things that we feel and that actually gets in the way of honest conversation sometimes is that those of us with a chronic illness, sometimes we don't want to be the downer.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, one of the ways is that we try to help is to sometimes lighten the mood of.
Well, I think that's such an important thing. I think for folks who have conditions, and certainly those of you in our audience who are listening, you know, when faced with the choice to find something humorous or not, I would always err on the side of trying to find the humor in things, because most people who are, you know, in that sort of transactional relationship with you or that you're talking to, they really do want to lighten the mood for you as much as for them. Because, look, I think for those of us who don't have these conditions, it's often hard to know how to create that social lubricant that you talked about. How do we broach the topic? How do we start a conversation? You know, and we're going to have a guest here, I think, in the next couple of weeks, Danielle Burgess, is going to come on and talk about her journey with colon cancer and what she's been through. And, you know, she talks a lot about finding the humor in these kinds of conditions. And she's an amazing young woman, I know our audience should look forward to hearing her.
Yeah, you've got to find the funny. And it's not just physical, it's social, and it's mental as well. It's increasing that outlook and hope. And you know, you got to bring the fun in. You know, there's actually a mathematical relationship between the ratio of positive and negative events that you share with someone and the long-term health of that relationship.
Yeah, that sounds fair to me.
It's
like in a conversation, you know, there should be a meter. Somebody should get like a device, like an iPhone that has Siri on it or an Amazon Echo, and they should give you percentages of how much talking have you done versus how much listening. Because those of us who think we're smart people, think that everybody wants to hear what we think. And sometimes, not so much. Right?
I never run on too long.
No, we've never had to, you know, edit anything with you. But I find with myself that I do have to check myself and make sure that the conversations I'm having, the transactional relationship, is a 50-50 at least, where I'm listening as much as I'm talking. And sometimes that's hard. But I think that's exactly what you're saying, is that we have to balance that. Mm-hmm. And I think those sometimes, you know, especially with chronic conditions, that those who have them aren't sure how to be humorous about it and how to find humor in it. And I think hopefully this episode is helping people to recognize that you find ways to make things lighten the mood, to lighten up, to enjoy the moment and find humor where you can.
And I think that's a great place for us to pick up after our last break.
We all have challenges. Mine is multiple sclerosis. We each have this one life, and we didn't choose to be saddled with chronic illness. But there's a better way. So I choose to just jump. And you can too. It's your life. Live it well. ChronicCal.com.
Welcome back. We're talking about humor. You know, we were talking a little bit before we took the break about, aging and how my kids make fun of me from time to time. And, you know, it's kind of like that magic moment when they finally give you the birthday cake, you know, after a few presents, and there's only one candle on it. Because nobody wants to put that many candles on a cake anymore.
Yeah.
And then you realize, oh, crap, I am getting that old, right? The next thing they know, you're going to take their driver's license away or something like that. So, you know, when people acknowledge those things, you know that, well, you don't know this, but I mean, I think subconsciously, like I go through all these iterations of, okay, what's next? You know, when does my aging then become a problem? So, you know, as we think about humor, you know, we can go to, with chronic conditions, we can go to some pretty dark places. And I know I have. I mean, I think about some of these things and I think, well, why am I thinking that? When I'm reminded of it, it kind of brings it to the foreground for me. Like the one candle on a birthday cake, you know. I know that my family's just trying to, they're being nice. I mean, I don't have any concern about what they're really thinking. But I think, wow, am I getting that old that they can't put enough candles on the cake anymore?
Well, and we always think that everything is about us, even though we know intellectually it's not. We still see the world from our own perspective. And there's no doubt that sometimes when we're trapped in here with whatever it is we're trapped in here with, that gets pretty dark and uncomfortable and embarrassing and all of these other negative things that we don't want to acknowledge and we don't want to deal with. And yet, you know, sometimes it's just really ridiculous. And we've got to... Part of the reasons why we don't find it funny is because we hold ourselves to such impossibly high standards that no human can reach, and we have to acknowledge that, you know, it's sometimes it's pretty funny because we're just human.
Well, and of course, there's nothing funny about being diagnosed with a chronic disease of any kind.
No.
And there's nothing funny with dealing with the symptoms, right? But you can always count on the fact that the healthcare system, especially here in the U.S., will find a way to make those seem not as important, because when you get the bill, that's even worse.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It's you know, those bills can be devastating. And sometimes, I mean, the ridiculousness of the bills that you do get are kind of worthy of laughter. I mean, almost from the ridiculousness of them. And, you know, we talked about this in a previous episode, and that's when you take that on and say, okay, I'm going to go fight this, or I'm going to go ask for a discount, or I'm going to do something about it, right? But the immediate reaction is, oh my gosh, this is so ridiculous, it's actually kind of funny.
Or not to get too overtly political here, but as someone who, you know, lives with a chronic condition, just the fact that we are still fighting the battles to get access to the healthcare that we need at, you know, at every level, you know, from policy levels all the way down to our individual, you know, decision, all the way down to our individual fights with insurance companies and so forth. It just, it adds insult to injury.
Yeah,
it always does.
It just adds a level of ridiculousness to it that it's not funny. I mean, there's nothing intrinsically funny about it, but it's laughable in the sense that it's entirely out of your control, for largely, right? There's not a lot you can do about it. And no matter what insult your body is suffering from, the bill that comes is more insulting. And the way that the insurance companies treat you, and sometimes the healthcare system in general, the way they treat you, it's almost as if, well, it's got to be laughable, right? And you got to find a sense of humor in it and then go deal with the problem as best you can in a positive way. But I understand completely how you can go to a lot of dark places when the condition and its symptoms are already dogging you, right? And then the system, like you say, access, the cost, all those things then come right raining down on you. And you could say, well, it just makes everything worse. Or you say, it's so laughable, it couldn't get worse. My condition is what's key to me. Solving that or living with it and learning to live with it is way more important. I'll figure out, I mean, and we all know, where does the doctor's bill go in the stack of bills that you have? It goes on the bottom.
Yeah, of
Come
course.
On, it always goes on
of
the
course.
Bottom, right?
Well, and we've known for thousands of years that the difference between comedy and tragedy is a hair's breadth.
Like a grin and a grimace.
Like the grin and the grimace. And you know, the ancient Greeks recognized this with the masks that we're all familiar with. And that represents, you know, all humor, as we started here, goes right up to an edge. And all humor is about surprise, it's about transgression, it's about exaggeration, reframing, it's about finding just, you know, what is incongruent in the world. And there's a lot that is. And by identifying that and choosing that perspective rather than the tragedy, that's a way that I can express my personal control over something that I can't control.
It's hope.
It is.
You can't give up hope, right?
No.
Hope is what keeps you moving, keeps you moving forward. Right?
I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people think of the world as a struggle between good and evil. I think of it as a struggle between hope and fear. We can choose to hope or to fear. That's the choice that we have. And I choose hope, even though sometimes it seems like it's a really difficult choice.
Do we slide between those?
I mean, of course we do.
There's got to be some analog in between, right?
I mean, of course we do.
We're never all one or the other.
Yeah, you know, everything that I always say is always about it's a continuum because there's really
because again, I think
about.
That if we're always in the mode of hopeful and positive and optimistic, that's the forced. We're forcing ourselves.
Right. No, sometimes
that's a perfection you were talking about.
Right.
How we never achieve that. We're asking too much of ourselves.
Right. Sometimes it's perfectly okay to acknowledge this really sucks, and to even allow yourself some time to wallow in the suckage of it all. But
is that a technical term?
No, it's one of as a term from my kids. Suckage or sucky.
It's a form of baggage that sucks.
Exactly. It's okay to acknowledge the awfulness of what we're living through, but whenever you can, find the glimmer and share that hope and that fun. Because the only person that you're hurting is yourself. How we react is crucial.
Great point. Great episode. Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been the Chronic Life Podcast, where we live life well. Join the conversation on social media at Chronic Life Pod or at chroniclifepodcast.com.